You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for August 21st, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live and still fully covered by the 14th Amendment, it's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
Hey, Drift Glass, I found a website that will show you in, I think it's 41 languages, how to say suck my dick.
Really? Wow.
Anyone who talks to me about birthright citizenship, I'm going to look that website up.
Yeah. Just a redirect. We have entered a very strange place, Blue Gal.
Yeah, we have.
I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but this is the place where liberals have warned this country we are headed for a long, long, long ass time. And you want to start with Amazon?
Well, I guess we'll start with Amazon. We are now partners with Amazon, I guess is the way to look at it. We are Amazon associates. We make some money off of Amazon when you guys buy stuff from Amazon from our website link. We get a percentage of that sale. And Amazon made the news this week.
It did.
With an article in the New York Times, I believe, about corporate culture and how anti-family friendly Amazon has been. Now, there's also been some articles out there responding to this piece and saying it's not as bad as it used to be. I wonder whether that dovetails with the Family and Medical Leave Act or not. I mean, that's kind of where my mind went. You know, when a company can be sued for not being family friendly in terms of pregnancy and leave. Medical leave in particular. And that was all of this article was very anecdotal. You know, there were horror stories from former employees mostly. And, you know, you go in for cancer surgery and your supervisor puts you on administrative observation because you're not working hard enough. Well, I had cancer. You know, that's your excuse. someone was told, when she had a miscarriage, well, that's all right because your job should be your baby.
Wow.
And, I mean, just terrible, terrible behavior on the part of corporate management at this one company, which you and I looked at one another and said, oh, no, it's not just that one company.
No.
Oh, no.
that's the thing.
Yeah.
I have been through many careers in my time, in my long
checkered
past.
Are you banging your microphone?
I'm tapping my mouse. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be quiet. I'm sorry, Blue Gal. I've worked in the education sector, the public sector, the private sector, all the sectors. I've worked pretty much every kind of – and I've worked near enough to the top of the organization in a lot of cases where you can see what's going on. You can see how this works. Mm-hmm. It's not very complicated.
And you have habitually worked 80-hour weeks as well. You have worked 7 days a week.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
10-hour days, yeah.
And worked for someone who called one of my colleagues at his a family funeral in another country and demanded to know where the goddamn report was.
Wow.
And felt completely at ease doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not an anomaly. That was how that person managed. The person managed by terrorizing everyone. But before that person, it was clear there was a career path.
Mm-hmm.
And the career path was, you don't have kids, you don't have a family, you're willing to work insane amounts of hours. Because the real world analogy that everyone's might be familiar with is the Huffington Post.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the person at the top, you know, is all about serenity.
Doing yoga.
Yoga, lets everyone relax. And she grinds everyone under her to dust. And it really is. And of course, the people at the top are happy and well-adjusted and talk about work-life balance and getting enough sleep every night. But they have the luxury to afford to do that because everyone under them is working like galley slaves to make that person wealthy. And seriously, this was the corporate culture I encountered in the 80s and 90s. This was the corporate culture I encountered in the private sector once reengineering became a thing. And that was late 80s, early 90s. It was fire half the employees and tell the other half you have to work twice as hard now. You make everybody an associate or a director or a manager or something. Nobody is hourly anymore, so you can't have overtime. And you just keep piling work on people until they collapse or they quit. Mm-hmm. And you just say, look, if you the problem is not I'm giving you too much work. The problem is your time management skills are poor.
Yeah.
Maybe if you managed your time better is something I heard people told for decades. This is nothing new. This is corporate culture in America. And it works really well for type A sociopaths who are absolutely single-mindedly driven to do this.
It also works for people who are very young and single and are willing to give up, you know, how many years of their life to make, you know, $300,000 a year or $100,000 a year and then just cash out because you burn out. And then the next group of 20-somethings come in and get burned out as well.
And it works well for entrepreneurs who want to start a business and want to throw themselves into it. And that's great, really, sincerely. That's
awesome. Us. I mean, we throw ourselves in. This is a job. I keep telling my kids, they ask me if you're going to get a job. I said, I have a job. It pays our electric bill, trust me. It's work. And it's fun, and we give it all. We give it our all. So
and I work a series of interlocking part-time paper routes. If I get to make the Dr. Zaya's choice one day, then you might not hear from me again. Because you know, paying the bills is kind of important, and it's something that we on the left do a really bad job of. The audience accepted, of course. On the right, there's a thing called Wingnut Welfare. You can open up a think tank. You can start a newsletter. You can work for Bill Kristol. There's a career path for even the most mediocre pundit or writer or policy person on the right. There's no such thing on the left. In fact, the number of water holes are drying up on the left. Mm-hmm. But going back, I mean, this used to be when I was in my 20s and 30s, this was the common career path of lawyers and brokers, stockbrokers, people who were coming up in the trade. They would
work. And people who went Ivy League, you know, that, and that was something that was mentioned in the article, which is Amazon looks so good on your resume. It's like going to an Ivy League school. Yeah. So you give it 5 years of your life because then you can work anywhere. And that doesn't give you back your 5 years of your life.
But it's a trade. But you made the trade consciously. You've entered a field where you are expected to work 110 hours a week or whatever it is.
Well, this is why I don't feel sorry for any of the employees that did. I feel sorry for the people in the warehouses who are, you know, working 100 degrees and having to, you know, Amazon has been forced to put air conditioners in certain warehouses where it's just too hot to work because people were, you know, passing out. And family and parental leave is always a white-collar issue. until unions get involved, and that's
the thing. That's
why we're going to talk about Scott Walker and Donald Trump next.
the people, I had people work for me who were union members, and their time card said 8 to 4.
Every day.
And they did a good job, but it was 8 to goddamn 4. I'm out of here because that's my contract. Mm-hmm, and so it was fine when it was voluntary. Here's a profession that will demand enormous amounts of personal time investment, sacrificing your personal life, single-minded focus, and you will either become a great surgeon or you'll become very rich or whatever. That's fine. When consultants and people who run companies decide, hey, here's a thought. Let's just translate that entire corporate ethos into every fucking business. Mm-hmm. So that no matter where you work, you're expected to work insanely long hours and give up everything and sacrifice for the company. Mm-hmm. Even though at the end of the day, you know what? We're probably going to lay you off.
Yep. And you're a cash register worker at Lowe's. We're going to lock you in the building until we decide you go home. Yeah.
So
I mean,
this comes as no surprise. It comes as no surprise that the only people willing to talk are the disgruntled former employees.
Yes, right. Exactly. Of course.
But,
you know,
one industry where I wish this were more true, more disgruntled people would talk.
The media.
I would love it for former producers, former writers, former showrunners, former camera people from the networks where what they don't talk about looms very large in our minds these days were to talk even to us, even off the record, and say, look, here's the deal. If Chris Hayes says X, Y, and Z on the air, he's fired. Mm-hmm. So he's never going to talk about that. You can just give up even thinking about it. It's a job. It comes with a leash. It comes with a very nice paycheck, and that's the deal. But nobody says that. Nobody says that out loud. And that's what is fascinating me these days.
Well, and let's talk about Bernie Sanders for a minute.
Yeah, okay.
Bernie Sanders has been doing a very good job this week of teaching journalists how to do their job.
Yeah.
And, you know, the one reporter asked him about his hair versus Hillary's hair. And he kept his temper and said, this is really your question. This is really what you're asking me, because we have people in this country who are still uninsured. We have people in this country who can't find a job. We have children in poverty who are hungry. And you want to talk about hair. And her point, the reporter said, well, this is a gender issue. I'm talking about the gender issue. And he said, I'm not going to talk about hair. So
yeah,
we can talk about gender equality. We can talk about that, but I'm not going to talk about hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that all of us can learn a very important lesson from Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. And those of us who purport to follow Bernie Sanders and appreciate his leadership should think about this, because
yes,
as we said last week, the primary season is the one time when liberals get any kind of microphone.
Yes.
On the national stage.
Mm-hmm.
And Bernie Sanders is keeping his eye on the prize by not attacking Hillary Clinton and making this me versus her. He
exactly.
is making this about his issues.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see people on Twitter and Facebook attacking Hillary Clinton as a way of helping Bernie Sanders, I feel like an opportunity is being lost.
Right. Follow his lead.
Yeah. Talk about why socialism isn't a dirty word. Talk uh-huh. about why liberal isn't a dirty word. There are a lot of people on Facebook who need to hear that message.
Yes, they do.
That we need to regain a lot of lost ground
mm-hmm.
when it comes to the words liberal and socialist. And we can do that. But if you hear, you know, if you're scrolling down your Facebook page as a person who is only slightly interested in politics and you see Hillary, corporate whore of Wall Street, blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. Hillary hate is not going to serve those issues that we care about. And I just want everyone to follow Bernie Sanders' lead in this, because
yeah.
we're missing an opportunity to talk about social justice, racial justice, economic justice, jobs,
yeah.
infrastructure, children.
And
these are the things that matter.
We are drowning in a toxic environment. We are drowning in a toxic environment.
Well, talk about, you said the year of the carp.
Yeah.
I loved this. The politics of the fishing hole. Tell people about this.
You know, it's just at some point, you know, you can fish for anything you want, from trout to bass to sunfish.
Did you know that S.E. Cupp went fishing with North Carolina congressman, former governor, Mark Sanford?
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, to ask him about his journey.
Your journey down to the fishing hole. Talk about the fishing hole. Have you been to the hole recently? Is it fishy?
Yeah.
Yes, that's great, because she has those smart person glasses, so they imbue her with magic powers.
Okay. No,
the year of the carp is my shorthand for if you poison an environment to the point where the only thing left is the thing that can't be killed.
Yeah.
And right now, our media, and this is entirely the media's fault, and I include all the media, all the mainstream media, from Fox News to MSNBC, frankly, is turning this into a hellhole, a toxic pit where only Hillary and Donald Trump can survive.
Mm-hmm.
Because Hillary has 30 years of history and an entire political apparatus and a machine that will just grind her through the process. And Donald Trump has a I don't fucking care attitude and $1 billion mm-hmm. and 30-35% or higher of the base who will stand up and cheer every time he opens his mouth.
Well, I would argue that Jeb Bush has enough money to just sit there until Donald Trump implodes, if he does.
The thing. If it were neutral, he can do that. I completely agree with that. Donald Trump is creating such an immensely toxic environment that everyone else will have to become poisoned just to survive in it.
And you're seeing that. You're seeing that very clearly with their... What did you say about the spaceship?
Oh, yeah. It wouldn't shock me if tomorrow Donald Trump his immigration proposal is building a giant spaceship and shooting the illegals into space.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the GOP candidates would say, would propose a slightly smaller spaceship, because a giant spaceship is crazy, but perhaps a smaller one with more plush accommodations. But they would fall into line with the general.
So the giant spaceship is impractical,
exactly.
Right?
The giant spaceship, that's crazy. A 400-foot spaceship is crazy. A 300-foot spaceship, however, that's very doable. We could definitely do that. And so he is simply defining the terms of the debate every time he opens his mouth. You have Jeb Bush saying anchor baby.
Yeah.
Aloud.
Oh, my God.
Because if he doesn't, he'll be run out of the party on a rail.
Mm-hmm.
So it is this growing toxicity in the media, because we keep sticking a camera in Donald Trump's face and listening to what he says. There is a story there.
Yeah.
There really is a story there. It is the one story that nobody will report. And it's ominous by the fact that there are, you know, one thing that almost all pundits have in common on television, Blue Gal.
Yep.
Is they insist that nobody saw this coming.
I know.
Nobody. Oh, my God. I'm completely flummoxed. This is amazing. Nobody could have predicted that this kind of crazy pants nonsense would fly the GOP. I mean, who could have foreseen such a thing?
And there's another story out there on, you'll never guess who published it. I'll tell you. It's Politico.
Okay.
Politico has an article today about how Google could rig the 2016 election for Hillary.
Fuck you. I don't want to hear it. Not you, Blue Gal.
No,
I love you.
I don't want to hear it either.
I don't.
But yeah. And I read it. I read the article. And the only conclusion I could come to, because it is all about, you know, Google searches will bring up, they have the magic elixir that will bring up positive stories for Hillary, right? And make it possible for anyone searching for election news to only get the stories that Google wants them to read.
Yeah.
And my response when I just gagged because yeah. But as I wrote to a friend of mine, great, now GOP-based voters will have a scapegoat for their third White House loss in a row.
Of course. And it reminds me of Dustin Hoffman in Wag the Dog.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Oh, we did a story. We forgot the thing. We forgot the hero. You know, you're going to have this whole story. They have to have a scapegoat set up and ready to go. Someone has to
be blamed. And it's set up 16 months ahead of time, because then you can go back and say, see, we told you. They cannot possibly face the fact that the Republicans' ideas, in the words of Donald Trump, are terrible.
Terrible. They're just terrible.
They're racist and anti-human and anti-family. And really just inhuman policies that are bad ideas.
And you know who could straighten this out? Any liberal anywhere.
Yeah.
And that's why, and this is just, I'm being a little repetitive, I know, but this is why liberals are kept the hell away from any microphone, any camera, anywhere. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because the analogy I would like to use, if you don't mind, is the failure analysis after the Challenger disaster.
Yes. Yes.
The idea that...
You mean the presentation of facts?
Yeah, well, the idea that this tremendously bad, awful thing happened, and a bunch of NASA flacks and guys in white coats came out to explain to the world, this is all very complicated. This is literally rocket science. You can't possibly understand what went wrong. It's all super-duper weird, and there's math involved, and they had pointers, and they had charts, and they were just... And they had sort of log rolled the public, very much like the media is now saying nobody could have predicted this was completely unknowable. How could anyone have ever seen this coming? And they're log rolling the viewers into
the success of Donald Trump is what you mean.
Yeah, success of Donald Trump is unheard of, unprecedented. There's no possible way anybody could have seen this coming. And at the Challenger disaster, a media failure analysis meeting, up there in the corner, bless his heart, is Richard Feynman, my favorite physicist, no longer with us, I'm afraid. And Richard Feynman is sitting up there with a C-clamp, a piece of O-ring material, and a glass of ice water.
A beaker of ice water.
That's it.
You know, which he can prove is 32 degrees because there's ice in it, right?
It takes the C-clamp with the O-ring material in it and drops it in the water, waits a little bit, takes it out, takes the C-clamp off, and you know what? it's lost its elasticity.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's vulnerable to exactly the same kind of disaster. He said,
it's going
to
crack.
Therefore,
yeah.
If this material is exposed to these temperatures, it will lose its elasticity and there will be an explosion.
And we have pictures of the shuttle with ice on it.
Yeah.
Just like this beaker of ice right here. Yeah, it was very understandable to any layperson.
And very
ice makes the O-rings brittle.
and very quickly, the NASA flax ran away and had to regroup because, oh, shit. Because it really is. It is complicated, but it is explicable and understandable. And if you have someone who knows how to tell a goddamn story, who's a teacher and who knows how to present the facts in a simple, clear way, as opposed to the experts who are there specifically to create confusion. They're there to create the impression that this is ununderstandable by you, the layperson. So just let us worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what is missing from our media. There is absolutely no objective failure analysis going on where anyone with a microphone, other than the despised outcast liberal media, such as the Professional Left podcast, is saying, no, this isn't complicated at all. It's really simple. You have one of our two major political parties is insane.
Mm-hmm. And they have been trained to be this way.
And if you simply trace the origins of the crazies, first of all, anybody who says that Reagan has no hand in this needs to be slapped upside the head with a copy of The Invisible Bridge by Rick Perlstein.
Mm-hmm.
And just all you got to do is follow the bouncing ball from Nixon to Reagan to Clinton to Newt Gingrich and through the Bush years. And now we have a lens. For the last 6.5 years, we've had a lens to focus all that paranoia, all that rage, all that hatred, all the fuel that makes the Republican Party run. We focused it on the Kenyan usurper, the evil, monstrous Negro in the White House who's out to destroy us all. But now Barack Obama's on vacation, and now he's not the headline anymore. So all this rage and paranoia and frustration has to go someplace. It can't just disappear because it's baked into the GOP. So where does it go? It goes Hillary Clinton, and it goes to Donald Trump.
And Planned Parenthood.
And Planned Parenthood, yep.
Yep.
And it's not hard to understand. What is, and ergo, if this is true, if my analysis is correct, therefore, there is obviously a conscious effort on the part of the news media to not fucking talk about this.
Well, and to go through with a very fine tweezer and try to make the Hillary email thing a story.
Right.
That's the flip side of this, which is, we're going to ignore the GOP base's insanity, which is propping up and making Donald Trump the front runner over and over and over again, no matter what he says.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, here comes Hillary Clinton has deleted an email.
Yes.
And that's the biggest scandal since Watergate, says Bob Woodward.
Yeah, well, and there you go. That's all the proof.
And there you
need.
Go. And I actually wrote a post at my blog this week, which I never do, about comparing Hillary Clinton as, the target of over and over again, Vince Foster, Travelgate, Whitewater, Monica, Benghazi. And now they've gotten to email server, and everyone has email server problems. As I said on Twitter, it's really too bad that Rick Perry and Mitt Romney's staff couldn't have shown her how to wipe an email server.
Yeah.
Because both of them knew exactly how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And we are to the point where Hillary Clinton and Fidel Castro have something in common, which is, the United States government tried to kill Castro so many times.
Uh-huh.
That finally it got to the point of, all right, yeah, you're a commie and you killed your enemies and you had a violent rise to power. But you know what? You're a survivor.
Right.
And we got to respect that.
Right.
And it's the same with Hillary. They fake scandaled this woman so many times and cried wolf when there was no wolf there so many times and are timing the Benghazi hearings to be next summer. Just for politics, that she is now, and this is too bad because she's immune. She has built up immunity to scandal.
And
as I said, she could have an affair with anybody except Bill Cosby, and I wouldn't care.
Well, and here's the real problem for that as a progressive and a liberal and
yeah.
a certain socialism I kind of like, which is there are real problems with Hillary Clinton's policies.
Absolutely.
And you know who has a lot of really sensible things to say about those things? A guy named Bernie Sanders.
Yep.
And if we could just, for Christ's sake, we have $1 trillion worth of telecommunication technology at our fingertips. We have real issues that we need to discuss. And we have people who, if you can just get them to stop for 5 fucking minutes playing the, you know, get Mark Halperin the hell off the helicopter. You know,
Donald Trump's helicopter ride.
On a helicopter with Donald Trump. It's a
and Mark Sanford's
helicopter.
Fishing boat. Yeah.
And Chuck Todd, who demonstrated how completely out of his fighting weight he is when it comes to taking on Donald Trump. He has no idea how to handle someone like that. Because his job is reading poll numbers at you and going, and that's it. And having on David Brooks and Arthur Brooks and all the other Brooks brothers, they're not brothers, and having on a bunch of centrist liberals, centrist Democrats, and a bunch of conservatives to talk about how the middle is where you should be. That's really all he knows how to do. And reading numbers off of a sheet of paper that tell you that the Quinnipiac poll says thus and so, even though it's a year and a half of the election, they don't mean anything. He has no idea how to actually conduct himself like a fucking journalist. And so Trump just ran circles around it. Meanwhile, and he got Mark Halperin and put him on a helicopter and made him smile and giggle and jump up and down.
And squeal.
And it was embarrassing. And if they just, you know, look, let's take a 5-minute break. Let's take a 1-week break from acting like morons who are embarrassing yourself, but they don't really care because the only audience they care about are their peers, the people who live in the Beltway bubble with them. And there are actual policy differences that we need to discuss. Hillary Clinton is terrible on the on TPP. Hillary Clinton's trade policy is disturbing at a minimum. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see an actual policy discussion among John Kasich, for God's sakes, if we have to have one in the room, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, and toss in a few others. I'd love to see that. I'd love to see that go on for 3 hours on a panel discussion. But that's never going to happen. And the thing is, it can happen. It's easy. You need a table, some cameras, and somebody who knows what the hell they're talking about to facilitate a discussion. Mm-hmm. And the reason it won't happen is it won't get eyeballs. It's not clickbait, and it doesn't make Roger Ailes.
The thing it is clickbait. It would get attention. It would have people watch it. But the suits don't want that because the advertisers don't want that.
Well, because you can start talking about things that will directly affect their bottom line.
Exactly. Might directly affect corporate America, and you can't have that. I did want to talk for a minute about MSNBC.
Yeah, please.
And I did notice, and I also want to talk about Hillary Clinton and Black Lives Matter, because that happened this week. So much happens in between time that we sometimes forget what happened. MSNBC, you were talking about it like it's an AM rock station,
yeah,
you said.
It is. Hillary hate for the drive time. 3 hours of Hillary hate with Joe and the Morning Zoo crew.
Yeah. And someone on Twitter said that they had a tinge of frat boy mentality on that show. And I went, tinged?
Yeah. I don't think that word means what you think it means.
No. That's all it is. Yeah. And then you have Trump all night long.
Yep.
It is Trump all night long on our liberal TV.
Yep. Last night, a good example, the Trump town meeting, town hall, whatever the hell it was, which he set up deliberately to get into Jeb Bush's head and face. He took his podium and planted it as near as humanly possible to Jeb Bush and just...
I've got to give him credit for knowing his television strengths.
Oh, yeah. He's good.
And he didn't go into someone's living room or someone's restaurant.
No.
He sets up a podium in an auditorium and pontificates. And that's where he is in control of the message.
Like Fidel Castro.
He
just pontificates. And MSNBC sets up a camera and spends an hour of television time where they could be talking about a million other things.
Mm-hmm.
And they could be talking about Donald Trump. They could be dissecting the problem with the GOP, the psychotic break the GOP has had with reality that is so incredibly dangerous. But no, they said to have Linda Chavez on to talk about how Ronald Reagan would never put up with this shit. How fuck you. Ronald Reagan's the father of all this stuff.
Yep.
And so it is.
But she's right in that Ronald Reagan had actual amnesty. I was shocked that a Reaganite reminded people that, you know, St. Ronnie actually gave his California farmer friends
cheap labor.
That's what he did.
Well, she reminded a bunch of liberals watching MSNBC.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, the memory hole will close right back up again tomorrow, and we'll go back to a state of permanent short-term amnesia. But that's the situation we have. That's the media we have.
Hillary Clinton talked to some Black Lives Matter activists, and I was impressed with the whole conversation. I watched it. I was impressed with how these two sides, one of which is old school political action, get stuff done, get legislation passed, Hillary Clinton, and a very new movement that wants urgent action on a really urgent problem. And is, you know, I don't want to be patronizing. I think they're trying to do things in a new way, and it's uncharted territory.
Yeah.
And that is exhilarating and also scaring and a little bit not disappointing, but I keep having Teach Your Children Well, that old hippie song going through my head of, you know, the folks in Black Lives Matter who are saying, well, marching with Dr. King doesn't cut it anymore.
Yeah.
And I respect that because in some respects, that's just boomers wanting to be patted on the back for all the good they've done.
Well, that's Bullworth.
Yeah.
With his,
yeah,
with his, you know, wall full of signs with him and Bobby Kennedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except
exactly.
Bernie Sanders hasn't become a, you know, depraved greenhead over the last 30
suicidal.
Years.
Suicidal. Yeah. Yeah.
No, he's actually walks the talk.
Yeah, but even that, even saying walk the talk or do the work is self-congratulatory.
Sure.
And there's a sense within what I'm perceiving from the Black Lives Matter movement that they want to start afresh. And I respect that, but I also see in that down the road pain and heartbreak. And you can't warn someone about that. Being a liberal means your heart's broken a lot of the time.
Yep.
And
yep.
Wanting real change means your heart is broken a lot of the time. And so I loved how the Black Lives Matter people were clear in insisting upon their sense of emotion and demand for a turning point in our culture, not just platitudes. And at the same time, frankly, I was really impressed with Hillary Clinton saying, really insisting on the limits of who she was and who she is, and being a politician, not a guru, and that she has to get legislation passed and she has to package a program that will sell. And, you know, she, I think, acknowledged who she was and the limits of what that is in a really clear way. And that doesn't mean that it wasn't a contentious conversation or a tense conversation. And seriously, anyone who says Testy and Clinton together can suck my dick.
Well,
because you never say that about Chris Christie,
no.
So fuck you.
Well, and
media that wants to say that, I'm sorry, I'm going to keep talking
please,
for just a minute.
Please.
Media people that say that can really need to stop. But she did insist on the limitations of what a politician can do, and that's what she is. So, and just because a conversation is difficult doesn't mean, in fact, that often means we're actually talking to one another rather than at one another when emotions get in the mix there. So I'm not afraid of difficult conversations. I don't like to be bullied, but I really felt like in this instance, no one was bullying the other person. They were presenting who they were.
And they were both speaking
that,
honestly.
And we need more of that. Yeah, and
both,
we need more of that.
One of them was talking about the movement and hearts and minds. One of them was talking about the sort of practical, unpleasant plumbing of politics. And what it takes to get things, you know, legislation passed. And I know I shared this with you offline, but I take a certain pleasure is not the right word, a certain measure of, I don't know, old dude satisfaction in a nice way, in a very nice way, knowing that however fierce the struggle is today and however passionate the people are and committed they are, and I assume they are, and how incredibly frustrated and impatient, and you know, you all have had years to fix this. You're all sort of complicit. Screw everybody. Mm-hmm. We're starting over again. In 20 years, there's going to be another civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. There's going to be another batch of young, smart, passionate activists who will look at today's civil rights activists and going, fuck you, grandma. What have you done for me recently? And they're going to say, but I back in the day, I told Hillary Clinton to go screw her. Hillary, you know, who cares? Who cares what you did 30 years ago, old man? Mm-hmm. You know, what have you done for me lately? And that is simply inherent in movements that want to start afresh. They start.
And that's why I mentioned that song, Teach Your Children Well, which is from the 60s. Yeah. Again, same as it ever was, seems to be the way it is. Yeah. So,
and that's not a reason for cynicism. I'm delighted human nature is that way.
Yeah.
But after you've been around the merry-go-round a few times, you recognize it for what it is. It's not discounting what they believe. It is, I understand there's a cycle to this, and we're at this point in the cycle.
Yeah, yeah. And that's not a bad thing, because that brings energy and youth into the process.
Yeah.
And you are formed by what happens to you when you're 21 to 29.
Yep.
For a lifetime.
Yep.
So gay rights activists, Black Lives Matter activists, abortion activists, you know, people are being radicalized. That is the good news that's coming out of the Donald Trump, Planned Parenthood, Mike Huckabee assholery is that people are looking at that. People of a certain age, and by a certain age, I mean 23, are looking at it and going, oh, fuck these people.
I want no part of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So... welcome to the Whig Party, you jackoffs, and we'll move on. Hey, each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Loki the Mischievous, and Loki is so lovely. Go visit Loki at our Facebook page and website. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com. Where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And Driftglass, we got a $5 bill in the mail this week that said, thank you to my fellow Mr. Robotniks. don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local, but we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. So shopping Amazon with our link does bring money into our pocket and pays us for our podcast work, and we appreciate your support there. Approximately 1% of our 5,000 listeners support this podcast with a contribution every once in a while. And you can, too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. Someone sent us a message on Twitter today that we are now... in the hot box for iTunes for news and politics, woo-hoo! Which is new and noteworthy, or hot and ready, or something. I don't know.
Hot and nasty, baby. Hot and nasty. Coming to you, hot and nasty, liberal news.
Anyway, go out there and rate our show on iTunes, and that pushes us up the view box for iTunes and gets us more listeners, which we want to spread the word.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have our 300th episode in 2 weeks, Driftglass, on September 4th. So that's very exciting.
Ooh, and happy anniversary, Blue Gal.
Yeah, thank you. Happy wedding anniversary. Yeah. That's right. This is our wedding anniversary this week. And you sent me such a beautiful card. Thank you very much. It was just, you know, I cried. I did.
She did.
I did. I cried. It was lovely.
It was sharp, and it was covered with paper cutting. So
No, it wasn't.
I'm going to move you one way or the other.
You called me your refuge.
Yes. Is that what that word was? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's nice.
It's a big word. I'm not good with big words.
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, keep lying. All right. Hey, Douglas, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties say forget Ashley Madison. They're pretty sure you can have an affair with Josh Duggar for free.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2015, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
So, Science Fiction University, Dogfaced Herman, has written to us and said that he got a new horse.
Yay! Don't tell middle child
there's a new horse over at Dogfaced Herman's house. This is a gelding by the name of Hendrix. And a gelding is a castrated horse. However, Hendrix still appears to like the ladies.
You know, there's a farm joke in there,
There's a farm joke in there. But anyway, Hendrix is in a paddock with four female horses, and they all seem to be entertained by him in some way. So, you know, interesting afternoons, as Dogfaced Herman says.
Yeah. Hey, girl.
And this horse will never be hacked by Ashley Madison people. So,
no,
you know.
This is an analog horse.
Right. He's got it all right in his paddock. He's ready to go. Okay.
Living the dream, my friend. Living the dream. All right. So, Dogfaced Herman has sent us some stuff.
Yeah. He sent us five clips of. He says it's bad science. I would also argue that it's bad science fiction.
Oh, yes.
These are movies from the 50s and 60s in which is displayed some really awful science as well as just science fiction.
I must say, topic-wise, the timing couldn't be better.
I know, because you're reading a book.
I'm reading a book, a paper book with both my hands. hard science fiction, which I thought was a lost thing.
And as you said, I am sure that listeners are going to say, oh, you're reading that book? I read that book 10 years ago, came out. Yeah,
I was told, I followed him when he was serializing it online for free. You're an idiot. Yeah, I'm an idiot. I know.
Well, what are you reading? What is it called?
It's called The Martian by Andy Weir. And it's a wonderful, wonderful book about Matt Damon.
Matt Damon, yeah. Who's going to be in the movie in October. And this has been big news. They released the trailer this week.
It's awesome. It's hard science. It's actual hard science fiction. It's a man is left behind by accident on Mars, manned mission, stranded. And
he has to survive. It's Apollo 13 in a way, in that he has to use what he has on hand in order to survive, right?
Right. And the science in this is everything.
Yep.
Everything. How many?
Well, let's go into the opposite of that with these questions,
so
all right?
This couldn't be better time. Yeah.
And anyone that wants to discuss that book with Driftglass, no spoilers till he finishes it. But you're going through it pretty quickly. I gave it to you yesterday, and I think you're about a third of the way through. So
I'm carrying with it wherever I go. So.
Yeah. And yesterday was our wedding anniversary, and after you gave me a very romantic card and said happy anniversary and a very nice kiss, the rest of the morning was spent talking about this Matt Damon movie. And, you know, it was very, very funny. And by the way, happy anniversary. Now I want to talk to you about this new science fiction book I want to get. And so I knew what to get you for your anniversary.
See?
We ran out and got it that day. Yeah.
We did.
So, all right. These are bad science in bad science fiction movies. And here we go. Number one. Try this one.
The fact that the survivors were severely frostbitten is of particular significance, indicating that extremely low temperatures were somehow produced. Now, what does this imply? Simply that by rapidly lowering the temperature of a certain object, its gravity would also be decreased.
But isn't it impossible to remove gravity from a stationary object or a certain place?
Yes, you are right. You see, it's been considered impossible up to now. But now it has happened right here on Earth.
As you know, the cause of gravity is the motion of atoms. And when the atoms of an object have no movement, its gravity is correspondingly diminished.
Yeah.
Now, please identify, if you may not be able to identify the movies in these instances, but could you please identify the bad science at least?
Well, Nation of Origin, I'm guessing, is Japan. time period, you know, this when all of the great, awful movies, mid-50s to early 60s in that
range.
Yeah,
all of these are in that range, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And, you know, I'm not sure. It's been a while since I took physics in high school. But I'm pretty sure you can't freeze friggin' gravity.
Right.
Because, you know why? Because if that were true, then the opposite would be, every time you have a campfire, you create a black hole and you die. Oh, you're creating more gravity by lighting a match. Oh, my God.
This movie is called Battle in Outer Space.
Wow.
From 1959. And Doc Face Nerman says, I'm pretty sure gravity doesn't get cold. Yeah, that's exactly right.
I got to say, I like the complicated explanation of it being wrong. You know, that you can't just say it's technical, you wouldn't understand it. No, we're going to give you a technical explanation that is completely wrong in every respect that you could have found out with one phone call, maybe two, to any high school class. But, you know, that would have spoiled the whole plot, probably. So
then you couldn't have a battle in outer space.
That's true. That's true. I sense that there's a lot more bad science in this movie, but I only heard the one clip.
We could only give you a soupçon of the bad science in this movie. All right. Mm-hmm. Number two is a very famous movie. Try this one.
It can safely be assumed that 2 million years ago, this Brontosaurus and other ancient reptiles roamed the Earth. It was known as the Jurassic Age. During this period, there was another species which we may call the intermediary animal, a cross between the land-living and the sea-living animals. And judging from this photograph, this creature is over 400 feet tall. Of course, the question we are asking ourselves is how this animal happened to reappear after all these centuries and so near to the coast of Japan. One answer could be that some rare phenomenon of nature allowed this breed of the Jurassic Age to reproduce itself. And for a long span of time, it had no reason to reappear to the world. But now that analysis of radioactivity of the creature's footprint shows the existence of strontium 90, a product of the H-bomb.
All right. Well, that would be Gojira.
Yeah. This is Godzilla, 1954. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Again, another fine Japanese export.
Yes.
I don't know. I know that thousands of years ago, when dinosaurs walked the earth.
It's amazing when Japanese people are, you know, all of a sudden biblical literalists. I didn't realize that they were that way.
Jesus and Godzilla once existed at the same time. That would be a great movie. Godzilla? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Write this down, somebody. Godzilla versus Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, you can't be 400 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thing. If I recall correctly, the square cube law of mass and dimension. You square the height, you cube the volume, which means that above a certain height, you collapse under your own weight and are a puddle of goo. So insects may be exempt from this.
Mm-hmm.
As we know from them and other fine science fiction movies of the period that America created, you can have grasshoppers. No, you really can't. But you can't have big animals. Just don't grow that big. They can't. I'm not sure what else. I'm sure there's a whole bunch of other things.
Yeah. Doc Face Sherman says, yes, Godzilla could not exist because a 400-foot-tall creature could not have the bone structure to hold its weight. Also, the amount of calories it would need on a daily basis would be enormous, and it would move really slowly because of the time it takes for a brain signal to travel the length of its body.
For the brain signal to travel from the screenwriter to the director.
Well, see, that has to happen, too. All right. Number three.
Somebody miscalculated on these boots, lad. They're far too heavy.
They were all right outside. I can't understand it. There. Look. Moisture. How can there be water without atmosphere? Impossible. This may be something that only looks like water.
Scientist doesn't know enough to come in out of the rain. Laird, has it ever occurred to you that maybe this is atmosphere?
On the moon?
Could be why it's hard for us to walk. Weather's atmosphere, there's got to be gravitational pull to hold it. Even I know that.
We'll go back and get our instruments.
That won't be necessary. This'll prove it.
It's burning. That means oxygen.
One at a time. It's air, all right. Wait till I tell him I was the first man to breathe on the moon. Maybe we could bottle this stuff for sale. Moon mist for chronic coughs and asthma.
Wow. I don't know what this movie is, but I really want to see it now. It's cool that gravity gets stronger in places depending on where you're standing. Like if you're, I've noticed, Blue Gal, that if I'm in the house, my shoes are very heavy. But if I step out of the house, suddenly they're not so heavy. I didn't know gravity behaved that way. Again, maybe this is a throwback to the gravity's really little particles of things that you can't
see.
Or
it's colder if it's warmer, then it's gravity. Yeah.
And oxygen, no. On the moon, atmosphere of any kind, no. And I'm pretty sure, again, I'm cheating because I've been reading this awesome book, The Martian, that the last thing they send you in space with are matches.
Oh, no, you get matches and Camel cigarettes and a candy bar when you go into outer space. Oh, wait, that's not it.
In case you run across any moon ladies.
What?
Got nylons and chocolate and some, yeah, ladies.
Ladies, yeah, wow. Please, I'm an astronaut. This is from Catwomen on the Moon, 1953.
Oh.
Yes, gravity is stronger in a cave. Oxygen is in the cave. Why would an astronaut bring matches to the moon?
Yeah.
Also, Dogface Herman warns you that just because you think there's oxygen doesn't mean you should take off your helmet.
Hillbilly is in space. Yeah, what does this button do? And I'll just sniff the air. It'll be fine.
Admiral Clampett.
But, you know, really, to give them their due, they didn't know that 50 or 60 years later there'd be pedants like me going. But these are things you can solve with a high school science book.
Textbook, yes, absolutely.
And so I do not forgive them retroactively for this.
All right, number four.
All right. Now, the most important thing to remember is the geography. You want to be sure that the place you leave will be there in the future, or it was there in the past, depending on which direction you're going. Now, places like beaches are always safe. Secondly, always keep your time indicator right here. Set 30 seconds behind the present, so in case you get into some kind of trouble, you'll have time to get out. Here's the forward control. Here's the reverse. The time selector in seconds, minutes, and hours. And this particular model spans a period of about 8 weeks in either direction.
You're serious about this? You're speaking of time travel?
Yes, Kitty. Another dimension. A fifth dimension. Now let me show you the remote activator. This is in case you can't get to the control panel in time. It's a ring, goes right on your finger here. Press firmly on this side, you activate the future. On this side, you activate the past.
Okay, well,
here's your time travel, Driftglass.
Above and beyond the fact that time travel is impossible, except forward at 1 minute per minute. Yeah, the last place I'd stand if I were traveling in time would be probably a volcano and then a beach.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've seen the time machine and I don't want to get trapped inside of a mountain or under a wave or whatever.
But Driftglass, tide goes in, tide goes out. You can't explain that.
That's true. That is so true. And also, I'm pretty sure the time is the fourth dimension.
Mm-hmm, not
the fifth dimension is a musical group from the 60s.
When the moon is in the seventh house. See?
Why be fussy? Really, why bag on these poor people? Who they tried their best.
Well, and they wanted to name their movie Dimension 5.
Uh-huh.
Because Dimension 4 was boring. So Dimension 5, 1966. Two rules for time travel. Make sure the place you're going is there and it's an empty space. Well, the Earth rotates and revolves around the sun. The sun is in a rotating galaxy in an ever-expanding universe, so we are never in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there is no such thing as empty space. There is air, dust, and if you're in my house, cat and horsehair.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Dogface Herman points out, you know, you might get a horsehair up your nose if you time travel, so be careful of that. Now, Dogface Herman has a comment here. He says, I give Doctor Who a pass on this because, the TARDIS. The TARDIS will figure all of this out.
Yeah.
But I will not give a pass to a James Bond knockoff who has a magic belt and a matching ring, as he does in Dimension 5, 1966. Yeah. All right.
No. And here's the thing. A well-constructed time travel story is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
The best one you and I have seen is Edge of Tomorrow.
Edge of Tomorrow.
And Looper. I mean, really.
Oh, Looper. Both of those are very good movies. Yep.
And they're just the machinery, the construction of it, that you can make the plot work around this phenomena is really ingenious. And if you do it well, good job.
It's the performances in Edge of Tomorrow, you got to give Tom Cruise credit because he just carries it off. The scene that sticks in my mind, and you and I have watched this movie, what, 8 times?
Yeah. Pieces of it, at least, yeah.
The scene where, you know, he lands at the beach.
Yeah.
Ironically, he lands at the beach, you know, the fourth or fifth time he sees his buddy die. And he knows, I don't have time to save him ever. Right. You know, I tried the first 2 times to save him. I've got this motion that I have to go through, having learned what I've learned from time travel. And he's going to die every time I land on this planet. I'm not even going to look at it anymore. And the look on his face is so, Tom Cruise's face is so, he has his defenses up against pain so clearly.
Right. Implacable. I'm just going to do this.
Right. And
screw it. I'll feel him dead. I've watched every one of these people die 1,000 times already.
Right. Right.
So, you know.
And a shame that they put live, die, repeat on the... on the masthead for that movie when it was in theaters, because now it's a classic, I think.
I said it should have been called Ground War Game or Ground War.
Ground War Games, yes, that would have been funny. All right, we have one more.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right.
The worst ever. But here, listen to this one.
How can this be, Commander? Is this the doing of a mad scientist? Black magic or mumbo jumbo? A nightmare? Nothing of the sort. This is an application of fact. Facts beyond your ken. Perfection. Perfection. That's what I'm after. Here's a race with beauty, dignity, and compassion. Where selected individuals can live indefinitely. A race I am proud to say we designed. We men. A man-made race that will one day people the universe. Yes, it's Connie. Magnificent, is she not? Your Connie is the epitome of perfection. She's being prepared. Attuned. Attuned to me, Halstead. To me. Soon she will be ready for the great moment. When she and I will become one person. My flesh will absorb hers, and we will be fused into one person. We will be one dual person. That will be the perfect culmination of my work. The total fusion, the great moment.
Jesus, I have no idea. I don't even know what they're doing. It sounds like they're taking people like Play-Doh and mushing them together and making super people.
They are. Dogface Herman sent us, I'll put this in the links at my blog and yours. He sent us the trailer from this movie, and it is like Plan 9 from Outer Space, in that it aims so high but fails spectacularly.
Yeah.
You're making a superhuman race. This is Wild Wild Planet from 1965. You are merging a male and a female human body. And there are many failures and these kind of zombie-like creatures, you know, locked in a cell somewhere. But when they succeed, these are superhuman female fighting machines in black underwear.
Oh, now I'm sensing the reverse engineering that went into this. Like a movie with chicks in underwear fighting.
We're fighting. Do we make that happen? Yes, right.
I have an idea. There's lots of laws of genetics that have been passed down through the centuries.
Well, no, Dogface Herman just gave up on the answer to this when he just went, look, your guess is as good as mine as to what they're trying to do with the science in this movie.
Well, and I'm pulling this out of thin air, nearly. There was a botanist, I think, named Lyschenko mm-hmm. or Lamarek, I forget which, who worked for Stalin. And Stalin wanted it to be true that you could inherit acquired characteristics.
Yes, he did. That's right.
Cut off the tails of two mice and you breed them, and eventually you get tailless mice. And that genetics just doesn't work that way. I believe the guy told Stalin what he wanted to hear, so he kept his head, and a lot of other people didn't. But it seems like that. It's somebody didn't understand even the most basic things about how life works. Mm-hmm. And so screw it. It's just a bunch of Play-Doh. We're going to stitch people together and make them into monsters, and hot chicks are going to fight. And if that's your plot, cool. But please don't try to schmuss any science on top of it.
We're putting them in plastic capsules that are connected like the Dome of Silence in Get Smart.
Oh, Jesus. That's great.
Cone of silence. Yeah. Huh? It will connect you.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. And this got made. Let's be clear.
This got green lighted by somebody.
Somebody said, you know what? I'm digging the whole idea. I'm digging this hot movie idea, my man.
Your girlfriend gets to be in the movie. Okay, then.
I have a producer credit. Of course you can.
Of course you can.
Here's a big wad of money. Now go away and make whatever the hell you want.
As long as my mistress stays in the picture.
50 years later.
That girl I met on Ashley Madison, she stays in the picture.
Well, and all these years later, all the mediocre shit is gone, but this has survived.
Oh, it's so bad. So. That's right. All right. The pinnacle of awfulness. Thank you so much, Dogfaced Herman.
Thank you.
And, do pet Hendrix for us and give your new horse our love. He sounds like he's living a pretty good life.
And now I'm going to go cleanse my palate with 4 pages of actual science fiction.
No, you're gonna talk to us about Mr. Robot.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I am.
It's the most awesome show on television.
It's the most awesome show on television.
And by the way, I did want to point out something. I got a Facebook message from Robert Chaz Shute, and I know I can use his full name. Middle name spelled Chazz, last name Chute. He is an author who has sent me some of his zombie books. He has a new robot book out. Go and Google his name. You'll find out. I've read his first zombie book, and he's a good writer. And he has stuff on Kindle that you can buy and read. And I recommend his zombie book. So I'm going to read his robot book next.
Well, Robert, 3 words.
And Robert Chaz Shute. Yeah.
No. I'm just saying, Robert, I'm directly addressing you. 3 words from me to you, free of charge. Godzilla versus Jesus.
That's Godzilla all I'm versus Jesus.
All I'm saying.
That should be your next.
You're right. Saying. Yeah.
But Robert Chaz Shute wrote me today on Facebook and said, what do you mean? I just started watching Suits and I love it.
Sorry, dude.
So good for him. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's apparently a show you can sort of pick up and put down at any point and not miss that many threads.
Yeah. His series of books on the zombie apocalypse are called This Plague of Days. And he now has a new series called Robots versus Humans. I mean, very good. And as I said, I read This Plague of Days. He doesn't call it volume one. He calls it season one. And it's good. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. So,
good.
Looking forward to the Robot Planet series. Machines Dream of Metal Gods is the first book in the Robot Planet series. And Robots versus Humans is the second book. And they're like $3 on Kindle, you know?
Yeah,
come on. It's not a big investment of money, and you'll enjoy them if you like zombie stuff. Okay, but Mr. Robot.
Yeah.
Tell me all about that.
I can't tell you. I will not tell you all about it.
Okay.
There are, I'm sure, among our thousands of listeners. At this point, we actually have thousands and thousands.
We do.
Which is kind of cool.
About 5,000 listeners.
On a regular basis.
On a regular basis, yeah.
It spikes up to... you know, 10 or 20.
Well, and we're going to reach sometime within the next month or so, 3 million total listens.
Yep.
The number of times somebody clicked play on our podcast is going to reach 3 million.
Right around the time we reach our 300th episode.
If we had a dollar every time somebody clicked play on one of our podcasts.
Sure.
So, hey, we pay our electric bill with this podcast, so we're doing all right.
And I've had several people say that they really appreciate us turning them on to Mr. Robot.
Yes. Yes. And awesome. So are you going to spoil it? Let's announce. Are you going to spoil it for people, or are you going to not spoil it?
No.
Okay.
There's a plot change.
Mm-hmm.
We find out some facts about Elliot's past. We think we've nailed down what's real, what's not, and what goes into that is pinned to the wall for a later determination of truth.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, if you are watching the series, I'm giving nothing away to say that. Please note where the gun and where this episode...
You faded out.
I'm sorry. Please note, this is not spoiling anything.
Mm-hmm.
Please note where the gun was hidden and where this episode ends.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a reference to young Elliot and a movie choice that he makes when he is a young man. And some clever writer has pulled a quote from that movie and made it entirely perfectly appropriate to the situation.
And actually, yeah, critical to the plot of the story, which I loved. I love that the line from the movie that he saw as a kid is, you know, and it's as if he said, Jake, it's Chinatown.
Exactly. It's
that's very good.
And some writer was paying very close attention. There's a lot of time passing back and forth. It's a lot more chatty. Than other times, but there's clear, and we actually get to see Elliot lose his temper.
I love what somebody on Twitter said, which is Elliot remembers everything except to take his medication.
Yeah, exactly.
But if he took his medication, you wouldn't have the plot twists and the unreliable narrator that you have. So, and the other thing I love about it is actually Rami Malek, who plays Elliot in this, tweeted last night, "Are you still with me?" Because it is possible, I think, for the viewer with a less gifted actor
to
at this point say, okay, this narrator is completely unreliable and I am not on his side anymore.
Yeah. Certain, and he might be a villain.
Yeah, he might be a murderous villain. You don't
he
know.
Thinks,
right.
You know, he saves people and he punishes the wicked in a sense, but he also inflicts a lot of damage on perfectly decent people and has done some things that are really horrible. And you can sort of, like in Breaking Bad, you can understand motivation, but he is not the good guy.
No.
There is a good guy, and he's a secondary character, but an important one. But he's the hero, but he straddles a very ambivalent moral universe. And I'm not sure why he's doing what he's doing or how this whole plot got cooked up in his head. I will say, just as also a sidebar, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more in the big podcast.
Mm-hmm.
If you're interested in what corporate culture is like under the hood, it's a very good little, it's a little extreme, but it's pitiless.
Yeah.
And it's inhuman. Mm-hmm. And they don't fucking care about you.
Yep.
And they will drop you at the first sign of anything or for nothing. And by the same token, one of the characters explains, you know, grudges don't work in business.
Yep.
You don't hold grudges because it's just a waste of time.
We're a machine that's going to create money and wealth for us, and that's what we do. Yeah.
And you inflicted some damage on us, but you were clever about it, and we think that's worth money. So we would like to buy you now.
Yeah.
And it makes perfect sense that these sort of very powerful sociopaths who run large corporations think differently than humans think. They don't care about you. And the idea that there are these cold creatures interacting with each other. There's cold corporate creatures, and there's Elliot, who is there's a person under there struggling to get out, but he's very calculating. Is fascinating. It's fascinating to watch them interact with each other and size each other up. And
but I had not thought about that before. The inhumanity of certain characters versus the humanity of other characters, and the environments in which they live. I mean, you and I have talked about this before, that we always know exactly where we are on the show. and the sterile environments of the corporate headquarters versus the father's house where the hire or the job offer happens. And right. There's these beautiful mirrors from the 1930s on the wall that are completely unnecessary and completely yeah. decorative uh-huh. And sentimental. You know, that's what that house is. It's a complete tower of sentimentality and memory. And that's what's human. That environment is human. And the people that belong there and the people that clearly don't belong there are in this room. And I guess I don't know why that character was allowed to come to that house given his legal status.
Well, maybe those were his, you know.
His bodyguard, his police escort. Yeah. He had a police escort. Yeah, yeah. Because he had a ankle bracelet. He was under house arrest.
Or maybe he's no longer under house arrest because she essentially got him off the hook.
Yeah, yeah, that's possible too.
He's no longer there. The investigation has shifted. That was anyway. There was a trade made. Some, yeah. There's a lot of and one of the major characters has disappeared for two episodes.
Mm-hmm.
The most physically yeah. dangerous.
Yep.
Of all the people has disappeared for a while, and I fully expect to see him again. It has a comic book feel to it,
mm-hmm.
in that you have people with almost superpowers.
And you're not talking about his therapist either, are
no,
you?
No,
because she's disappeared as well.
Right, he destroyed her.
Yeah, well, he did. He told her everything about herself, and I wonder if she's going to come back because we learn a lot about Elliot in his conversations with her. So
it's really well handled. It is less shoot 'em up, bang 'em up action and much more mm-hmm. conversation. Some things that have been asked the entire season have been resolved, and some are hanging in the air like a storm
mm-hmm.
that's going to break a week from today or next week for the season finale. So again,
I don't know if this is true or not.
Uh-huh.
Someone on Twitter pointed out that Tyrell speaks Swedish and his wife speaks Danish.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure if that's
I don't know.
Actually true, but that'd be something to look up. I'm sure it's on the wiki, you know.
and I was going to mention, you think you're having a bad day. One of the characters in the show is laid off twice in one day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to speak. I'll leave it at that. Yeah. I think I've yeah. navigated it so that I won't spoil anything. But keep your eyes open. It's a really well
If you haven't seen it, it's a really good
episode. And we've also laid down some rules in our house.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You're not allowed to start watching Mr. Robot now with us until you've caught up.
Right.
So
because I don't want to sit there and explain.
And we just want to absorb the show. Right. So
why is, anyway. Why is this happening? So, no, you can't
no,
watch it.
You can't watch it yet. You have to go back.
You got
to
go study. Go to your room and study Mr. Robot and come down when you're done.
We are done with Science Fiction University. Thank you, Drift Class.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Dogface Herman.
My pleasure, buddy.
And thank you, Sam Esmail,
yes.
for making such a good show.
Nice job. Actors and
everybody. And everybody well, associated with that show. Thank you for
entertaining
us.
Even the musical score is kind of perfect.
I don't know what we're going to talk about after next week, because next week's the season finale.
Yeah, well, I'll think of something.
You'll want to talk about Walking Dead.
I might.
I'm not going to watch that.
I might just read long passages from The Martians. Martian, rather. And here's where he's doing the calculation of how much hydrogen it'll take to make, you know,
yeah.
that'll.
Okay.
That's riveting.
Fertilizer. Yeah. We know where he's getting his fertilizer. It's not pleasant. Okay.
I do. I love you.
Love you, too. Happy anniversary, by the way. We've been married 4 years.
Yeah.
We've been podcasting for longer than that.
We have.
And as I said on Facebook, we've been podcasting for and married for longer than Bobby Jindal's ever going to be president.
Uh-huh.
So that's the good news.
And we accomplished all of this without ever once logging on to Ashley Madison.
See?
Mm-hmm. See?
Good for us.
Although we love the internet because it brought us together.
The internet brought us together. I read your blog. You read mine. And we liked each other's writing, and then we met, and then it was, oh, he's nice.
Uh-huh. All right, enough of this mushy nonsense. Let's get
Love
on to
you.
The...
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
Bye.